Okay, good morning, everyone. Shalom Aleichem. We have the special schus and honor and kavod to read Parshas Korach this Shabbos. We have a bar mitzvah shul, but I first want to begin by really expressing the point, is this really called Parshas Korach? Lubavitcher Rebbe, whose yahrzeit is on Gimel Tammuz, which this year, Gimel Tammuz is this Shabbos, points this out in a sicha. And he asks the following question. He goes, how could it be that we would name the Parsha after a Rasha, after somebody as evil as Korach? We have the Pasuk in Mishlei, which says, Shem Rishayim Yirkav, the names of the evildoers shall rot away. Meaning, we shouldn't really mention the names of Rishayim. We shouldn't, and if we're going to mention them, it should be in the negative. It shouldn't be for a positive reason. Yet we have a whole parsha in the Torah named Korach. So in fact, I want to just share with you that not everybody calls this parsha Korach. And I thought that was a fascinating point. In the Sefer Otzar Plos, the Torah, which he's quoted from time to time, he writes that the Nefesh HaChaim, written by Rav Chaim Palagi, not the Nefesh HaChaim by Rav Chaim Palagi, when quoting a medrash from our parsha, he quotes and says, this is Parshas Ben Levi. And others, the Kaf HaChaim, when mentioning this, he says, this is Parshas Ben Kehos. Meaning, they're purposefully overlooking the notion that this parsha would ever be considered to be called Parshas Korach, because why would we do that? Why would we do that to ourselves? Other Rishonim refer to this Parsha as a Parsha called Vayikach, as the first word in the Parsha is Vayikach Korach.
Rabbi,
here, yeah.
And they don't have any problems that in 2 more weeks when we come to Parshas Balak?
Good. I was going to make that point, but you did it for me. Good. So I think we're going to have to ask ourselves that same question in 2 weeks from now. In 2 weeks from now, it's called Parshas Balak, right? Balak sought to incite, and he did incite the Jewish people to do a tremendous amount of Averus, leading to a huge magefa, a tremendous plague amongst Klal Yisrael, in addition to hiring Bilam as a, you know, curse for hire for the Jewish people. So against the Jewish people. You're right. I think in 2 weeks from now, we'll have to look into this topic again and address why would it be that the Torah would call the Parsha Korach. What is fascinating also, just I think a lot of side points come out of this, is who names the Parshas? Like, where does that come from? So Rav Chaim Kanievsky, because you could say maybe this was just a printer's thing and the printers did this. So they answer Chaim Kanievsky that saw this question in one of his svarim called Deres Sicha. Deres Sicha, Chaim Kanievsky had many svarim like this where people would ask him questions and they would write it down. In fact, in the later years that I went to go visit him, somebody would literally be scribing down the questions and the answers as they would be asked in real time, and they would put these into svarim. So somebody asked him, where the Shemos HaParshios come from? And he said, I don't know. Eine yodeya imhu mizman chazal, v'yesh mehem shumei chazal, evash shumei ga'onim sharkakach. Rav Chaim Kanievsky knew everything. So for him to say, I don't know, was very, you know, rare. And he wrote, likely it comes from chazal, which means 2,000 years ago, from times of Tanayim Amorayim. Or if not, it comes from the ga'onim. But he felt it did come from a Jewish source, the names of the Parshios. In fact, Rav Tzadok Kohen HaKohen Miluglin, Rav Tzadok writes that the name of the Parsha, the Shem Shal Kol HaSidra, this is in a sefer called Resisei Laila, Kifish Mashanagu Yisrael Krosa, Hu HaMechavin Shal Kol HaSidra. That name impacts the entire Parsha, not just the first pasuk or the first story per se, but it impacts the entire Parsha. Korach really takes up the whole Parsha. Other times, like Lech Lecha, it's the beginning, but doesn't refer to the end. But he really says that embodies, that name embodies the entire Parsha within itself. And I want to focus on this for one more moment and add 2 points. One is from the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer writes that it was Korach's name itself that caused him to lead the rebellion. The Gemara in Yuma writes that Shmagarim, that the name of a person affects their destiny, affects who they're going to be. When I have a schus to talk to young parents who have new children, and we discuss possible names, one of the greatest schusim that I have as a in my position, one thing that I like to frame the name of the child. What is it? What are you doing naming the child? You know, we learn that it's nevuah. What I really feel like it's a tefillah for what you want the child to become. And that name embodies that, the hopes, the dreams, the aspirations for who you want your son, your daughter to become. The Chasam Sofer writes that was the problem with the name Korach. Korach in our Parsha, Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kehas, was not the first Korach in the Torah. Anybody know, looking at you, Abe Weintraub, or anybody else, who is the first Korach in the Torah?
Rabbi? Right,
whoever's, yeah.
I think it's Esav, one of Esav's children.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. It's Korach, Yalum, Yalush, one of them.
Very good. Oh, yeah. Very good. Yeah, Abe, you got the pasuk. Great. Sharon and Abe, very good. Va'aliv ama yalda, this is Bereishis Lamed Vavhei. Va'aliv ama yalda es Yeush, des Yalam, ve'es Korach. Ela b'nei Esav, eshe yaldu lo be'eretz Kanaan. Right? So it's one of the alufim of Esav, one of the grandchildren of Esav, was named Korach. And we have to be very careful and thoughtful and intentional when we name our children. And we're naming them after good people, good intentions. The Kavana should be there. And the Chasam Sofer says it's already anticipated where Korach was going to be in the future. A very sharp insight from him. I'll just add the story. I was once, Sarah and I were in the airport, in Ben Gurion Airport, waiting to board a flight. And we saw this little boy. It was like probably like, you know, one of those like 1 o'clock in the morning flights. And this little cute boy was running around the airport and his parents were chasing him, trying to keep him at bay. But at the same time, you know, he's going to be like in a seatbelt, hopefully sitting quietly for 11 hours. So they let him run around the airport and the parents were chasing him and screaming, Nimrod, Nimrod, Boikan, Boikan. They named their child Nimrod, right? We can understand. What did they know? It sounded like a good name to them. Yet, this is not, just because it is a name in the Torah, I didn't follow up and see where he is right now. That was about 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
This is my own thing that I just came up with. If you take the word Shalach and you take the word Korach, the letters that if you rearrange them and don't use the ches twice, you have the word sheker and you have the word chal. Okay? I think I need to still, chal means apply. So apply the lies. In other words, learn from the lies that you learned here in the Torah, how deceitful these people were and over here between Korach and the Meraglim.
Well, okay. Very powerful. Very powerful. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. So I want to add one last point to this first Nakuda, and that is from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, who he said his Yahrzeit was on Shabbos. And the Rebbe takes this and spins it on his head, because that's what the Rebbe would do. And he said, there is a purpose for naming this parsha Korach. There is something for all of us to learn, but there are chasidus from the name. And he says it's the appropriate name for the parsha against Rechaim Palagi, Kaf HaChayim, and the point of the Chasam Sofer. And he writes, Kasher Pokshim Yehudi, Hanira klapechutz kimi shenimsa b'matzav ruchani yarut. We can approach a Jew and we could look at them and see that they are nowhere near where a Jew should be. They're so far away from Torah, right? Sorry, this is the second point. The first point he makes is Korach. The reason why we can learn, what can we learn from Korach? That Korach had she'ifos. He had a tremendous desire to connect to Hashem. And that's what we learn from Korach. That Korach, you're right. You know, he made a big mistake. And he caused a lot of divisiveness amongst Klal Yisrael. And ultimately, Hashem had to intervene to punish him in a very, very unique type of way. But yet, there's something to learn from Korach. Korach wanted Gedula. He wanted to achieve greatness. He wanted to connect to the Almighty in a very real way. And that is something that is very special and something that we all can learn from Korach. That Korach, the Rebbe said, had a tzad hatov within him that unfortunately came out in the wrong way. And therefore, he says, the Parshas called Korach for that purpose. And then the Rebbe adds a second point. Rashi says something in the beginning of our Parsha, which he usually doesn't say. Rashi tells us in the beginning of Korach, Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, the first words of Rashi are Vayikach Korach, Parsha Zu, Yafa Nidrashta B'Medrash Rabbi Tanhuma. This whole Parsha was darshaned well in the Medrash Tanhuma. Now, many later commentaries are troubled by the words of Rashi. Why does Rashi need to tell us this? Rashi is either going to tell us the Medrash, he's going to tell us the Pshat. Rashi usually very rarely tells us his methodology here. So the Rebbe saw within this a deeper message to what the Rebbe was telling us. Very often, we can reach and see and meet a person who is like Korach, who is so far away from Judaism, so disconnected from a life of Torah and mitzvos. What should you do when you see that person? Judge them, run away from them, disengage. He says, Parsha zu yafa nidrashta. The Parsha of Korach is yafa nidrashta. It's darshaned beautifully. If we only were nidrash univakesh, if we try to doresh means to do exegesis, to dig deeper, to squeeze out, you know, and to look inside of the parsha, we could see some beautiful gems, Rashi says. He says we should do the same thing about people that are like Korach, to get into their pnimius of who they really are, their mahus, their essence. And if we do, yafen nidrashta, we will see the beauty of those people. And that is the deeper message here. We can learn from Korach, the Rebbe says in a second, yafen nidrashta. We need to give them that chance. And if we look inside, we could see the goodness in every single person. That was thought number 1/2 on our parsha. Okay. Yasi?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
When did we switch from a 3.5-year cycle for the Torah to the 1 year?
So it's a good question, and I would address this. In Bavel, we always did a 1 year cycle. In Eretz Yisrael, we did a 3 year cycle. Okay, Eretz Yisrael, probably, I don't know, it's hard to know exactly when, but, you know, not recently, 1,500 years ago in Israel, they switched in. What Yossi is referring to is that the Gemara, I think it's the Gemara in Moikata, maybe it's going Chagiga, writes that how often do we finish the Torah? We take it for granted that we finish every single year. But that wasn't always true. There was a Minhag Bavel and a Minhag Eretz Yisrael. In Bavel, they finished every year, like what we do. And in Eretz Yisrael, they finished it every 3 years. That's what some people point to for the past, you know, few months Eretz Yisrael in America have been off by one parsha. And so some people say that, what's a big deal? You know, others are like, you know, we got to switch this, we got to change this. And others say, what's the big deal? For, you know, for many, many years, you know, many centuries, we were always off. And it was off by a lot more than that. So what's the difference then? That's that. So, yeah. So I don't know when Eretz Yisrael changed.
Okay. So, but in those days when they did it, each parsha that we have had like three names because it was divided in three.
Correct. Oh, what were the names? Is that right? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. But in Chutzlaritz, it didn't have that. So Chaim Kanievsky assumes the names were something that came from a long time ago. Yeah. It's a good point. I don't know. There are certain communities that might still hold to this. I'm curious what they call their parshios. I don't know.
Okay. Good point.
Okay. Thought number two comes from the very next set of psukim. Moshe sends, so part of the cast of characters that were part of this rebellion were our old and dear friends, Dasan v'Aviram. Come to the bar mitzvah, the Shabbos, the bar mitzvah boy will be talking about Dasan v'Aviram on Shabbos in his drasha. Vayishlach Moshe l'krol Dasan v'Aviram b'nei Eliyavir melon ala. So Dasan v'Aviram, Moshe sent messengers to them, which is great. Communication. People are angry at you. People want to fight against you. What did Moshe? Moshe said, good, let's communicate. Let's talk. Let's talk it out. And they said, we're not going. It's enough that you took us out of a land that was Zavad Chalav Udvash, that was flowing of milk and honey, to kill us in the Midbar. And you also want to like be leaders over us? That's ridiculous. Right? And he says, and you're not even bringing us to a place of Eretz Zavat Chalav Udvash. You're leading us here. And even if you gouged at our eyes, we would not go with you. And this caused Moshe to be very distressed. What does this mean? Right? What were they so angry about? Sometimes when the aggressors say too many things, right? It's not everything. It's not a laundry list, but there's something deeper going on over here. So the Abar Benel says the following. What was the claim, or what was the anger of Dasan and Aviram? Right? They were saying, really, there's no way we're going to go into Eretz Israel. Why is that? You've been promising us this for a long time already, and it hasn't happened. And that is, so we're fed up with you, Moshe. You've been promising and promising and lip service, and it has not happened yet. We're done with you. We'll do our own thing. Leave us alone, Moshe. That was the approach to Abar Benel. And again, this is coming off of, according to many Mefarshim, but not all, off of the Gzeira of 40 years now in the Midbar, that we can understand why Dasan and Aviram are angry about this point. The Sforno expresses a different notion, and I want to focus on this. The Sforno says that they say the following. We had it good in Egypt. Egypt was a land that was Zavat Chalav Udvash, the land that was flowing of milk and honey. You brought us to the desert and mocked us. And you're laughing at us, the fact that we're here. You promised to bring us somewhere else. And when you promise to bring us somewhere else, you're going to bring us there. We don't problem with that. That's Yibar Benel, that we know you're going to bring us there. You follow through. But when we get there, we're going to have all these responsibilities. Right? He adds in the following words, V'titein lanu nachalas sadeh v'cheren. Right? Which he didn't say we have land in Egypt. But when you're going to bring us into Israel, that's also a land flowing of milk and honey, and you're going to give us a place to live. What's the big deal about that? So the Sforno says what they were saying is that Moshe, when we go to the land of Israel, we're going to have a tremendous amount of responsibilities. We call those mitzvos. Mitzvos hatzlios ba'aretz. Mitzvos that are land-bound mitzvos in Eretz Yisrael. Vayichar le Moshe ma'od. What did Moshe get so angry about? two things. It was number one, the audacity that they would call Egypt the same moniker that we called Eretz Yisrael. That's chutzpah. And Eretz Zavat, call it a nice land. Using the same language that God used about Eretz Yisrael, that's very wrong. And secondly, they said, now we're going to have all these responsibilities. No way. We don't want it. We don't want it. So that is the two points of contention with Dasan and Aviram towards Moshe Rabbeinu. Completely different. According to this one, completely different than what Korach wanted, what anybody else wanted. Again, they're all angry at Moshe. So they you know, common enemies will group together and gather together against Moshe Rabbeinu. But you see here, as we are, you know, entering, hopefully not entering, but entering the zone of Chodesh Tammuz and the 3 weeks, how we should frame and understand, you know, living outside of the land of Israel. It's commonly known, right? How it was that people in Germany before the Shoah would say, we don't need to go to Eretz Israel. It's not necessary. You know why? Berlin is our Jerusalem. We don't need to go there. We commonly, and maybe appropriately or a little bit jokingly, call cities in America Ir HaKodesh, Fairlawn, Ir HaKodesh. It might be nice, it might be cute, but maybe it's not something that we should do. There are Ir HaKodeshes, Arim Shel Kedusha, and those are cities in Eretz Yisrael. We have four Arim Shel Kedusha, and those are all in Eretz Yisrael. During World War I, Rav Kook was stuck in Europe. It's a lot to say about his when he was stuck in Europe. And he was, at one point, he was in Berlin living with one of a colleague of his, a friend of his. And the colleague wanted to show off the beautiful apartment he had. So he was on a very high floor. And from there, he was able to see all of Berlin. And when Rav Kook, you know, saw this, and he goes, look at this, look how beautiful this is. You know, and people try to convince him to stay in Chutz La'aretz and influence the community there, which again has its has a lot of merit and value. So Rav Kook immediately, like almost instinctively, didn't have to think about it. He began saying, Al na roz bavel shami ashavnu gad machinu bizachrenu es Zion. Right? He said, yeah, we can recognize the beauty outside of Eretz Israel, but we can never equate the two. And that's what Moshe, who ultimately never made it into Eretz Yisrael, was so distraught about himself. It was so difficult for him to hear these words from, you know, from Dasan and Aviram. That we, you know, we also need to think about how we relate to the land of Israel, Klape, you know, our sojourn right now. Okay, that is thoughts number two. Continue on the thought number three. And I've always had trouble with this. There's a lot of things going on in the parsha. You have, like we mentioned, you have Dasan Aviram, you have Korach, you have these rebellions, you have the one of the tests was the 250 bonds to take these fire pans and bring Ketores. You have the Aaron's, you know, staff sprouting. And it's like hard to put all the parsha is going back and forth between addressing all these different factions here. And I want to focus on the following. The Torah tells us that these 250 men were supposed to take these fire pans. And Moshe said, if you guys are right, you could bring a Ketores and everything will be good. And if not, something pretty, you know, harsh is going to happen to you. And ultimately, they brought the machtos, and they all were killed. They were consumed in the fire. After this happens, Hashem tells Moshe to go to Elazar. Elazar was going to be the next Kohen Gadol, the son of Aaron. He tells him the following: the aremes machtos mi ben asreifa v'se'ez rehala ki kadeshu. He says that you should take the these fire pans that were used in the rebellion of Korach, and we're going to affix them to the Mizbeach, and we're going to make them, mold them onto Mizbeach, and they're going to be part of the Mizbeach. And the Mefarshim are troubled with this. Why would it be that we will do this? So the pasuk says, "V'yihiyu le'os le'bnei Yisrael," that it should be a sign for Bnei Yisrael. So Rashi tells us the reason why we're going to affix these to the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach represents the Kohuna, represents the priesthood of the Jewish people, the leadership of the Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash, specifically. That's where their reign was. And he says that we put it there to remind people that the Kohanim are the leaders. And the, you know, look what happened to the last time that somebody stood up against them. It didn't work out so well. And that is what we are reminding them of. And they're Aser Bahana'a, and they're part of the Mizbeach, right? So the Ramban himself is troubled by this. How could it be that such, you know, things used in a punishment could then turn around and be used in for something kadosh? So I want to use the words, the Netziv says something very, very beautiful over here. He says the following: the men who offered these fire pans were not sinners. They were holy people, right? They were holy people who wanted an opportunity to connect with Hashem, right? They wanted an opportunity to connect to Hashem. And trying to get the words up. Right? They got in with the wrong crowd. They got in with Korach. But they wanted something deeper. This goes back to the Rebbe's point about Korach himself. They wanted to connect in a very deep way with Hashem, but they were under the influence of somebody, right? Innocent people sometimes are very innocent, are swayed by the wrong guy. So the Torah, though, puts their fire pans, right, on the Mizbeach to show that they, right, they had the right intention. They barked up the wrong tree. They were pursuing something that they could not actually attain, right? Chachotim ha'ela b'nafsho sam mesher chatal ha'nefesh. Right? The Netziv writes that this is what the Torah means, that these men, they sinned to their souls, the Torah says. B'nafsho sam, they sinned. But they are misguided in their direction, but we need to learn from where they were coming from. Therefore, the Torah tells us, right, Zikaron l'bnei Yisrael, this is something that was going to help them. Something that we need to remind them to always be trying to grow in our Yiddishkeit, in our Judaism. And this is the way to go ahead and do it. This is not the way to go ahead and do it, sorry. This is the way that we can learn from these individuals, ultimately, how to strive for Kedusha in our lives. That is number 3 for today. The fourth idea comes from the Kli Yakar. The Kli Yakar writes the following. So the last test that is done is that all the Nisiyim are told to take their staffs and plant them right outside the Mishkan. And whichever staff is going to sprout, that is going to be the leader of the Jewish people. He's going to be the leader of Kla Yisrael, the Kohen Gadol. Ultimately, it was our own staff. The Torah tells us this in the following words. Vahimi Macharas, the very next day, they came back. Vayavo Moshe al Ola Idos. Vihine parach matei Aaron lebeis Levi. Vihine, right? Vihine parach matei Aaron. Vihine, right? Rashi, so the Kli Yakar here says, Rashi is a comment, it's possible. The Kli Yakar says, what does the word hine mean? It's just like, it's, and it did. What's hine mean? So hine, usually, right, in many stories, you have the word hineni or hine, usually means anava and zrizas, excitement, humility. There's one more place that it's being, that it's used in the Torah, and that is in the context of Moshe and Aaron again. The Torah tells us that when Moshe went out to lead the Jewish people, when he left Midian to go to Egypt, the Torah tells us the following. Vayomer halo Aaron achicha alevi adati ki daber yidaberhu. Hashem tells Moshe that your brother Aaron is going to come to greet you, to bring you into Egypt to save the Jewish people. Vegam hine hu yotzei likrasecha. Hine, behold, he's going to come and to call out to you. Bracha v'samach b'libo. He's going to see you, and internally he's going to be happy for you, right? And put yourself in Aaron's shoes over here. Moshe has been gone for 60 years. Aaron was living as a slave in Egypt, and he was a leader of the Jewish people, trying to give them any sense of hope and optimism, and teaching and tending to. Moshe, his younger brother, shows up 60 years later. I'm going to step in and take all the glory and finish the job. And what's Aaron's reaction? Bracha v'samach b'libo. He's not only coming to me to help you, he's ecstatic for you. Explains the Kli Yakar. There's a connection between all of these hines. Hinehu yotzei likrasecha, the merit and the zechus of hinehu yotzei likrasecha, Aaron has a zechus of hine parach matei Aaron. Aaron gets this miracle, right? Because of what he did, his reaction to his brother many years beforehand. And it's not just, oh, because one leads to the other, but it really represents a total devotion of the needs to another, and really a total devotion to the needs of the Jewish people. And that when in that moment, when you can access somebody else in your, and feel true simcha, right, and help them succeed without any personal gain. That's what made Aaron at that moment. That made him into the ideal candidate to become the coming gadol. Bracha v'samach b'libo. Right? Korach's entire argument, right, in our parsha is Madua tisnasdu al kahal Hashem. Why should you, Moshe and Aaron, be the people that rule over us? Korach upset, because he has been consistently passed over as other people from his tribe have been offered positions of leadership. When he sees the rise of others, he's overtaken by jealousy. Aaron, on the other hand, when he sees other people rise above him, he's only happy and excited and willing and able to help on their behalf. That's what makes Aaron into a leader and makes Korach into a rebel, makes Korach into somebody that we try not to remember. Leadership doesn't emerge from speeches and platitudes. Korach was a very powerful speaker, but leadership emerges from a care and concern and compassion for others, from an ability to step outside of oneself and to appreciate the compliments, the accomplishments, sorry, of those around you. Aaron, and if you notice this, throughout the entire parsha, Aaron doesn't say a word. Probably because Aaron, if it was up to him only, he may even give up his position for Korach. Because for him, what's the big deal? Maybe Korach could do it better than he is. He is humble and he is willing to step out of the limelight and give it to somebody else. Ultimately, that's what made Aaron into the great person that he became, stepping out and giving people the other place to shine. And that ultimately is the role of the Kohen Gadol. It's not for him to be in the limelight. It's for him to give that opportunity for other people to grow and develop into who they become. Vihine Parach Matei Aaron, Vihine Aaron Yotze Bekrasacha. Those two work hand in hand ultimately to show our trajectory from one thing to the next.
Rabbi.
Yes.
I think the biggest challenge that man has is to be honest with themselves, because when something is a big decision to have, or there's something, a crossroad in life, you have to be honest to say, why am I doing this? Am I doing it because it's the Shem Hashem, or it's just the right thing to do, or I'm doing it because I'm going to benefit? And sometimes we lie to ourselves. We tell ourselves we're doing it the Shem Hashem for the benefit, but really we're only doing it because it's a benefit for us. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges we have in life.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. It's hard to keep ourselves in check sometimes. And we need to, I think the Parsha of Korach is there to remind us of, you know, we all have our things that we really care about a lot and really, go to battle over. We need to be in check about those things. Are we really, even if we're being lishma, I think most people are lishma about their things, but is it better for the klal or is it better for me?
Right.
And that is a question, you know, when we find ourselves being, you know, very passionate, overly zealous about something, we need to, before we, you know, we go to the next step, we need to keep ourselves in check.
Shalach too, yeah.
100%. What I think, I never really maybe noticed this before in going over last week's parsha, is in Shlach, they had their report after 40 days, and where'd they go next? Who they shared that report with? They went straight to the Jewish people, you know, whereas they probably should have gone first, right, to the leaders. You share with them first, and then you go. It doesn't mean Moshe and Aaron are going to squash everything, but it just shows where their intentions were. They were so brazen about what they wanted to accomplish that they went straight to the Jewish people, which caused they don't know how to speak to the masses and what that means and how you address serious concerns, right?
Also,
that's meant for certain people in certain positions. They know how to do it, how to communicate the right way to not create mass hysteria. I think would be okay with that. Yeah.
Out of respect, you go back to the person who chose you as the Miraglu.
100.
They owed it to Moshe Rabbeinu.
Yeah, 100%.
It's so 100%. Disrespectful.
Yeah. And that's part of the process. Whenever we find ourselves getting too much into something, we need people around us. Whether that is, from our parsha, we learn Own Ben Peles. So just the fifth thought for today, we're going a little bit long, is Own Ben Peles. Who saved him? He was going to join, and then we don't mention him at all afterwards. His wife. Right. His wife saved him. You know, and that is the contrast here. Whether it is a spouse, it doesn't have to be a spouse. It can be a good friend. It can be a Rebbe, a mentor, but somebody that before we get into the rebellion of Korach and get, you know, deeper involved, pause for a moment and ask yourself why you're doing this. Is this better for the klal? Am I doing the right thing? Have we addressed this in every angle before we're going, you know, nuclear, in our issue? And that's very important, especially in the culture and the that we're living in today, where everyone thinks everything is a major issue and we have to address everything right now and do it in the most extreme way. Okay.
Rabbi,
to review today. Yes.
You have Mrs. Own versus Mrs. Korach. That's the comparison.
Right. Right. They should have played Mahjong together and it would have been better. Yeah. Okay. They Mahjong in the desert? I think they did. I saw a Chazal about that. Just kidding. Okay. So just review today. We discussed the name of the Parsha. Was it called Korach? Was it not called Korach? Fascinating point of the Chasm so far that he was named after one of Esav's grandchildren, which caused him to maybe trip up this way. The beautiful, two beautiful pshatim from the Lubavitch Rebbe, that why the name is appropriately named Korach, and an insight into Rashi, that the Parsha is Yafet Midrashna. And we discussed the approach of the Sforno as to what was so frustrating and depressing about the claim of Dasan Rabbi Rem. Eretz Zavat Chalav Dvash was Mitzrayim, Eretz Israel. They didn't want any mitzvahs. They didn't want any responsibilities. They wanted all the gain with no pain. Okay. And then we discussed Vihine Parach Mate Aharon, the deeper message of that, the connection between that Hine and earlier Hine in Parsha Shemos, and how that ultimately leads to leadership of Klal Yisrael when we go that way. And we discussed the Nitziv, the beautiful Nitziv, about the holiness of the intention of these 250 people who are anonymous ultimately, and followed and wanted to follow Korach because they really had a she'ifa, a desire to grow and to connect to Hashem. They just got caught up in the wrong crowd. So we take their fire pans and we put on their Mizbeach to remember the Kedusha Shabbat in their holiness. And with that, we wish everybody a wonderful Shabbos.
Sorry.